This is Wells Tech, a show that explores the intersection of technology and ministry. Wells Tech is a part of the Streams Media Network sponsored by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Your show hosts are Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Join the conversation at wellstech.wells.net. Hello, everybody. This is Martin Spriggs on Wells Tech, episode 444 for Tuesday, May 10th, 2016. And I'm joined, as usual, by my friend and co-host and podcasting partner, Sally Draper. Hey, Sally.
Good afternoon, Martin. Happy to be joining you today. Happy to be finishing up a little project we've been working on for a few months.
I've been so looking forward to this day for probably the last 9 months. And the reason for that is we started writing a book about 9 months ago, and it didn't take too long after the first chapter that we realized this is a pretty sizable effort. And we are at the ninth and final chapter of our book entitled With All Your Heart, book about project management. So 9 months ago, or maybe a little further, we got together and thought, well, we've reviewed books, number of books, why don't we try and write one? And then we figured, well, what topic maybe is underserved, especially with our audience? And we thought, well, you and I are both knee-deep in project management. That's maybe something we can share some experiences on and maybe bring some resources together, and something that people, especially in churches and schools and other, you know, faith-based organizations, could take advantage of. So we set on this course to write about project management in those kinds of settings. And can't say it's been easy, but I can say that I have enjoyed thinking through all the different dimensions that go into managing a project of any size, whether you're on your own or whether you're with a whole team of people trying to figure out what is the best way to be a good steward of God's resources.
And, you know, Martin, I think there's a lot of project management books out there. So someone might ask, you know, why write another project management book? But I think you bring out a very good point in what you said, that it is specifically geared to nonprofits, to churches, schools, faith-based organizations. You and I do work on projects every day, but we work with a team of people that are paid to be there to get these projects done on behalf of the Synod. So in churches and schools, oftentimes, that isn't the case. You don't have a whole slew of employees to rely on. Big factor is volunteerism, and with volunteers, you know, things can start off with lots of enthusiasm and quickly lose speed and get dragged down because people lose their excitement over the project. So I think our book in particular gave a lot of attention to that, how to plan things on the front end and consider you know, all those different implications that come into play with nonprofit type scenarios like that.
Yeah, and I would say it's not that we don't deal with volunteers, because I think sometimes our projects do, and it's usually the client, so to speak, the subject matter expert that we're dealing with, somebody who's maybe running a conference, or somebody who's managing some of Synod data, or whatever it is. So, you know, there's different dimensions and different places where volunteerism comes in, and we mentioned those in the book. I think, you know, budgets are, you know, a concern always, and there's going to be different things that a church or a school is going to have to deal with it that we don't. But I think in general, there's a lot of sameness between nonprofits and how they deal with projects. I would say one of the things that is the same regardless of your situation is project management it can be really hard. And I think there are some challenges trying to figure out what best to do, especially with you know, some of the things that we're trying to tackle. But one of the things that is the same across them is kind of the gospel focus, you know, the importance of the work that you're doing, that it has eternal consequences. And we kind of flavored, you know, the book throughout. So the way we started this particular chapter, which is basically a conclusion, and we're going to talk a little bit about not just closing out the book, but closing out a project, is taking a look at the very last verse in Nehemiah of chapter 13, which is the last chapter. If you've been following along, we've taken Nehemiah as an example of a good project manager, somebody who had a big project of going back to Jerusalem, not only rebuilding a wall, but rebuilding people's confidence and their faith and He had some big responsibilities, and he did it well with God's, obviously, blessing. But the very last verse, the very last sentence in the entire book of Nehemiah simply reads, "Remember me with favor, my God." And that's kind of telling that that is one of the key motivators, is that we are trying to please God. You know, we are trying to be good stewards of the time and the talent and the treasures that he has provided. And so his prayer is, I pray that what I've given to you, this offering of this project that I give to you, is, you know, has found favor in your eyes. This is what you wanted me to do. And that really is the driver, right? And then he closes with that phrase, my God, a very personal experience, something that is not just a job, and it's not just for a God, you know, way over there who's kind of looking at a billion different projects, you know, being done on his behalf, but my God, it's a neat, close relationship that exists, and that's kind of neat. That separates our projects from, you know, basically the rest of the world's.
And certainly with that gospel motivation, knowing that we won't do everything perfectly, but that we're striving and doing it under the maybe the umbrella of Jesus' blood, that God will accept a believer's work through Jesus.
Yep. And that's the prayer, right? Mm-hmm. So let's talk a little bit, Sally, about what happens at the end of a project. We call it kind of project closeout. You've gone through days, weeks, months, years sometimes in some of these projects, and you finally reach the point where whatever it is that you've been working on is either delivered or done or available. What do you do? You know, what are the steps necessary? Do you just pull the plug and you're done and you walk away? I don't think so. There are some steps that you probably should be thinking about just to seal the deal.
Absolutely. And I think right at the top of the list is considering taking time to kind of rehash what it is you are trying to accomplish and consider whether you met those goals, perhaps identify things you could have done better or things you would do differently if you were doing the project again. If you wait until maybe next year's VBS planning session to try to remember those things from last year's Vacation Bible School, they're not going to be nearly so fresh in your mind. You might lose a lot of the little details that made a huge difference on your project. And so actually taking the time to look back and consider what you were trying to accomplish and whether you met those goals is very key. Not just to wrapping up this project, but to already springboarding you ahead for the next time you need to do this project or something similar.
Right, or you know, any kind of project that's going to require some of your project management skills. Keep in mind also that it may not be you doing the project next year. So let's say you were the head of the VBS project this year. That's been one of the examples that we've woven throughout the book. And maybe you're not doing VBS next year, somebody else is. You have to kind of think about them. So it's really good to kind of have this retrospective, we'll call it, this retrospective meeting, for instance, where you're getting everybody together. You're kind of going through an outline and identifying what went well, what were the project successes, what worked, what didn't work, kind of notating all that, what kind of documentation should we be putting together, what kind of maybe activities still need to be done to fully release the project or turn it over.
Right, and just as an example, we've put together a little document in connection with this chapter of the book that would kind of guide you through some of that. So it's asking you what the key dates were, what you accomplished, what weaknesses were, what resources did you use, and perhaps what you would do differently if you were to repeat the project. So just a place to kind of pull together those thoughts in a format that you can make use of. Obviously, you can develop your own format or do it ad hoc as the need arises, but we thought we'd share that document to give you some ideas to get that retrospective meeting going.
Yeah, we just had a Synod Convention planning meeting earlier this morning, and this only comes up every 2 years, a Synod Convention, and we have a pretty heavy file of, you know, notes from previous conventions where, you know, 2 years ago we would have, we would have really been stretched, even though we have the exact same people on the committee, thinking back, well, what went well, what didn't, what did we decide to do differently the next time? That kind of thing. If you don't write that stuff down, if you don't document that stuff, you're not going to remember it. One thing that I thought of, Sally, that would be really good in anticipation of that retrospective meeting is to gather data, as much data as you can, from both your team members, but also from the client, those people who are maybe taking advantage of whatever it is that came out of the project through the digital survey tools we've already talked about throughout the course of the project. Do one last survey. Survey your team members. Say, you know, let's plan a little bit ahead for our meeting. Think through some of these questions that we're going to, that you just kind of went through, so that they have a little bit more time ahead of the meeting. And then when you hit the meeting, you have maybe a little bit deeper conversation about some of the things that you thought about. And then also maybe survey the people that you're providing the service to or the product to, saying, you know, what did you think? Give us some feedback so that we can bring that into the meeting and maybe improve that over time. So great before meeting kind of thing. Another pre-meeting activity obviously should be if there is some kind of client that has kind of given you the requirements for the project, go through a formal or, you know, even semi-formal project acceptance process. So you've got their head, you know, the vertical head shake saying, yeah, you delivered what was the thing that we described, what we were after, so that you can come into the meeting and say, yeah, we delivered. This was a successful desired outcome.
Well, I just thought you were supposed to assume that they love everything that you do, and I can't imagine asking for their feedback, but what a concept.
Sometimes the reason we don't do it is we don't want to give the answer, right?
Right.
So I think it really is important to have that dialogue. And throughout, you know, we've talked about that too. Don't wait till the end. You know, throughout the process, this iterative thing that we've talked about, kind of do these checkpoints along the way just to make sure everybody's on the same page.
Definitely. Next up in the book, we talk about the need for documentation.
Oh, yeah.
It's almost a dirty word. I'm afraid to say it because no one really enjoys writing documentation. But maybe kind of in line with what you're describing, Martin, just documentation of the steps you went through for the process, maybe not documentation of how people would use it, for instance, but internal type documentation, things that need to be in place in order for things to move smoothly, or where you ordered certain supplies from, or whatever the different pieces of the puzzle were, just kind of writing some notes. I'm just reminded, you said you have a Synod Convention folder. When you're lucky enough to have a student at Minnesota Valley Lutheran High School, where my kids go, it falls to the parents of the junior class to put on a big after prom party. It's one of those things they don't tell you when you send your kid to school there, but all of a sudden you're on the after prom party committee, and they have a whole stack of documentation that goes along with that as well. This is where we rent all the fun things they do from, and this is how much the food cost last year and what quantity we bought. So that kind of documentation doesn't have to be super pretty or anything, but just something to give the next go-around some direction on what was done in the past.
And we make a point in this chapter that you might want to consider digitizing that, making that accessible so that we don't have to wonder, well, who's got the folder or what shape it's in, those kinds of things. And you know, maybe having some kind of standard within the organization that says, when you create documentation on project closeout, this is where you put it. So here's the Google Drive, here's the folder you put it in, this is the format you put it in, or that's OneNote, or whatever it is, whatever tool it is that you use. Just make sure all the project people know that this is the place where that stuff goes, and then nobody really has to wonder, well, where is that? It's always in the same place. So you don't have to kind of track down last year's project manager, coordinator, whatever. You just go to that place and bring it up, and then you can add to it. So that's probably a great best practice to kind of put in your organization.
Very good. We've already talked about communicating and getting feedback, but it's probably one more opportunity to just communicate with the congregation or school in general about how the project went. Thanks for all your prayers and support of Vacation Bible School. We had this many students attend, and this many were new to our church or school, and blah, blah, blah. Just kind of, they've been along for the ride. They've supported you. It's good to kind of wrap things up with a final communication to that audience as well.
Give them a chance to praise God for, you know, his blessings on the project. Also to give a shout out to, you know, the volunteers that spent, you know, the time and energy, and you know, how many volunteer hours were spent and who did what. Just kind of get people excited maybe for future opportunities for service, so that they see that, hey, there was a lot going on here. Maybe I could do that next year. I wasn't asked, or I was asked and I said no, and now you have an opportunity when it comes around again, because they got good vibes from the project.
Absolutely. Perhaps it's time now to just talk about the whole project in a nutshell. What you'll find in this chapter of the book is a project management workflow diagram. This is what we laid out in the book. It's not the only way, obviously, to manage projects, but it kind of ties together all those different pieces that we talked about all throughout the chapters of the book.
Yep, and it's not difficult. It's not you know, real complicated. We just took some big bucket things and kind of laid them out in a natural order.
The order being the planning phase, and then executing the project, and finally the review phase, what we just talked about as you wrap up the project. So, in planning, we mentioned things like the initial project request and seeing where it fits in your project portfolio, looking at requirements and risk and things like that. And then we moved on into actually executing the project, which has to do with those volunteers oftentimes. Scheduling, meetings, communication, all those things that go into making the project move forward, and at all times kind of keeping your hand on the pulse so that you know if there's any trouble brewing and you can troubleshoot any issues as they come up. And then finally moving into that review stage where you look back at the work and document for the next time you need to do the project.
Yep. Cool, and thanks for doing the diagram, Sally. Can I ask what tool you used to do that?
That was done in Visio.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then the last two sections are kind of a summary or collection of a couple of different things. If you've been following along, you know we've tried to create some tools, some templates for you along the way. So we created an artifact section. You could probably get these out of, you know, just going back through the book. We thought we'd bring them all together in one section with links to the appropriate resources. So the things that you just mentioned, a project request form, a project portfolio or requirements form, sample mind maps, risk management plan, project summaries, recruitment letters, sample agendas, OneNote files, social media content schedules, goes on and on. We just give the links to those so that you've got them all in one place. And we kind of organized the book in the same order that you'd kind of complete a project. So I think as you go down that list of artifacts, you're going to come across them as you need them. So.
And then one last section is related to the many tools that we shared throughout the project. It wouldn't be a tech podcast if we didn't have tech tools to help you with your project management. Probably one of my favorite things about the book, Martin.
Speaking of favorites, do you have any favorite tool or tools that are kind of must-haves in your project management tool belt?
Yeah, it's a pretty lengthy list, and interesting to ask that question. I probably would say off the top of my head, Trello. That's where I live for managing the projects that I work on. So I've become real accustomed to shuffling cards and looking for my things to do there and documenting it as I go. I also use OneNote pretty regularly as a collecting point for all different types of resources, diagrams, documents, emails, whatever it is associated with a project. I've got a OneNote. I have a place to file them away and can easily retrieve them from there. So those would be the two that jump out at me from the list, but I use a lot of these tools. It's nice to have them all in my tool belt and pull them out when I need them.
You picked my top two right off the top, which I could have predicted what you were going to pick because I know where you spend a lot of your time, and they are invaluable tools. I think if I had to pick two different ones, I would say Google Docs would be really valuable for a lot of congregations and schools, just kind of a great resource, free resource that you can use to store your stuff. And then another one that maybe doesn't get a lot of play, and we didn't mention it too often here, is Doodle, the ability to kind of schedule meetings. You know, I think that's a real challenge with a volunteer workforce is trying to find that one night out of however many nights, and if you've got more than just a couple people on a project team, wow, that is a challenge to try and get people to agree to a meeting time that works for everybody's schedule with kids' activities and, you know, church activities, school activities. It's just a challenge. So I think those are two things that would really help.
Definitely. So I think that brings us to the end of our book project, Martin, at least phase one of our book project. We've got something written. Now we need to figure out where to go with it from there. We hope to publish it in actual paper format at some point.
It was fun, and I think the name of the book kind of said it all. That's probably the thing that you probably want to leave the book with is the fact that whatever you do, do it with all your heart, and that there's really no substitute for that. There's no amount of tools or artifacts, templates that you can use that's going to be a substitute for just the passion that you throw into the project and keep it going for the sake of the gospel. And that's why I think we wrote the book in the first place. So hope you enjoy it and look for a little bit more from us as to how to get your hands on this right now. It's available in those sways that we've been building. So we have 9 sways. That's that Microsoft presentation tool that kind of fancies up the content and makes it accessible on whatever platform, whether that's on the web or on a mobile phone or a tablet. It kind of conforms to that and does a nice job. Sally, we should also thank all the people who contributed it to the book, mostly the people that we interviewed each chapter. They were willing to spend some time and add some richness to the book, a little bit of a different flavor for some of the chapters, and I think that's always good to see what other people are doing in the area of good project management.
Definitely. It was fun to look back and see all the different projects that we covered through those interviews. Very neat to have them as a part of it.
Yep, absolutely. Let's move on to our news in tech section, a time where we spend a little time talking about what's been in the news over the last week that might be relevant to tech and ministry. And one of my favorite tools from Google is their Google Slides application. And there was some news coming out of the Slides group from the Google Docs blog. And the fact that Slides now has a new Q&A feature that allows an audience to participate during the presentation. So there is kind of a back channel where they can ask questions that there's an interface for the presenter to see, and if they want to address questions at certain times within the presentation, they can stop, take a look at the questions that are being asked, and address them right in the presentation. Kind of cool.
Yeah, definitely. I could see a presenter really making, engaging with the audience and making connections with them through this type of tool. The back channel integrated right there is really a first. I don't think I've seen other presentation tools that do that. I've seen back channel kind of things that the presenter maybe could have on their screen, but it's kind of challenging for them to manage, you know, multiple things going on their screen at once. This is so nice for the presenter to have the questions integrated right there. Kind of like what we've done in the past on Wells Tech when we've advertised the live Wells Tech and people can chat right there with it. So,
yeah, some people would think, well, you don't want people's heads down in their devices or whatever, but sometimes there are questions that people are a little too shy to ask, especially in bigger audiences where they will ask, you know, on a device, kind of the back channel way. So I think there's a benefit to that.
Definitely. One more news and tech item actually happened last week. We should have talked about it on last week's show. May 5th, Cinco de Mayo, was also World Password Day. And just some encouragement to change your passwords. And they got a really cute spokesperson in Betty White to do some really fun videos to encourage you to change passwords. So you can check out more at passwordday.org. And certainly make the effort, change those passwords. You know, it's always in the news. I heard about a whole bunch of emails getting hacked, including Gmail accounts and things, but then it turned out that it wasn't necessarily as bad as what was reported. It was an old file that was hacked that was very out of date and probably didn't put very many people at risk, since many password changes hopefully have transpired since the time data might have been gathered that was in the file. But still, always a concern and something worth keeping up to date, your passwords. So even though password day is past.
Right. And that's just another reason that I'll put another plug for two-factor or multi-factor authentication, which is a safeguard against even getting your password hacked. Somebody could not penetrate your account because you have two-factor authentication turned on, which Google does offer, which you can set through a text message. So if you're trying to log in a machine that it doesn't know about, it'll say, well, I accepted your password, but you said you need two factors. So either type in the numbers that I'm going to send you to your phone, or use a tool like Google Authenticator or Authy, which is what I use, that provides you a six-digit number. So another reason to use something like that, especially for accounts that can contain some sensitive information or passwords or information from other accounts, like your email might, for instance, Gmail. So, all right, let's move along to our Wells Now segment, where we take a look at news specifically in Wells, and it is graduation season.
What a fun season within the Wells Synod schools, and all schools everywhere, obviously. But we turn our attention especially to Martin Luther College and Wisconsin Lutheran Seminary graduations happening the weekend of May 13th, 14th, and then starting midweek, May 17th through 20th at WLS. Obviously a wonderful time as those students complete their higher education, but also as assignments are announced to different congregations for new teachers and pastors. And all of those events are live streamed. We'll include a link in the show notes to this page where there are links to all the different Synod schools' commencement events and live streams. So dates and times are posted there. Be sure to tune in and rejoice that the workers are being sent into the harvest field. What a great time.
Neat. Yep. So those are all coming up in the next couple weeks. Wow. Mm-hmm. All right, our next segment, normal segment, is our tips or picks of the week, where Sally and I share something that we found useful, either a software pick, a web pick, a hardware pick, or combination of the above. And we always do ladies first on the show. So Sally, what's your pick?
Well, today I'm going to talk about Breakout EDU. Martin, you may remember we talked about this just a few weeks ago, I think maybe on our community feedback show last month. There was some buzz about it on our Google group, and people were asking questions and sharing their experience with Breakout EDU. If you missed that show or if you haven't had a chance to check it out for yourself, I have, and I want to give you some firsthand experience. Breakout EDU is kind of a groundswell movement. Someone put together the idea, and it's just really gaining the attention, especially in the education area. The concept is you send people kind of on a scavenger hunt, and the goal of the scavenger hunt, whatever the questions or challenges may be, are to attain ways to unlock physical locks. So in the picture I'm showing on the screen, there's some kids and they're opening a box because they've unlocked the locks. And usually you have a time frame to figure out whatever the puzzles are around it. So teachers are designing things associated with, you know, math skills or lesson reviews for different subjects. I've heard everything from biology to literature and all in between, where they're having the students solve puzzles around those course areas and in the course of doing it, obtain the combinations to the locks in play. So you can go to breakoutedu.com and sign up for an account, and you'll get access to different things. You can purchase a kit there. They have two different kits that they sell. One is is a kit with a wooden box, basically, and now they have one with a hard plastic box, either $90 or $120 for the two kits that they sell. But they also have a link available where they tell you what you can buy to open source your own kit. And that's actually the route I went. I'm going to stop screen sharing. I'm going to show you the kit that I put together. And I did it by buying a $5 box from Walmart, as long as it had something that was lockable on it. And then from Menards and Walmart came up with different kinds of locks. I didn't even know all these locks existed. So they use a lock that has directions. So you just push it north, south, east, west in a series to unlock it. And, you know, they have more traditional type locks that have, like, numbers, so wheels with the numbers you can turn. And I learned how to set all these different locks to different combinations to unlock them. The most fun is one that's a word lock. So it has all these different wheels. I don't know if you guys can see that. But all the letters turn, and you can spell different words. And they have to figure out what word you've set it to be able to unlock it. So obviously your clues have to lead them to a certain word for that one. And the idea is that you would use a hasp. Let's see if I can show it on my screen. Something that would allow you to hook in multiple locks. Let me see if my screen share is going to work. I found a version on Amazon. They actually linked to it from their page. Or there's now a 3D printable hasp that you can do with your 3D printer. So I've engaged my favorite 3D printing company to print me a hasp to use on my box. For now, I just lock them all on the handle and everything, and I tell them they can't open their box until they've unlocked all four of them, even if it is unlocked.
So the way the hasp works is that you slide the lock or the bar of the lock through the holes that line up, and you can't open up the hasp until all of those are clear.
Right, and this design, there's seven holes, so you can have up to seven locks on the one box, and they have to open up, you know, they have to solve the word puzzle and the direction puzzle and the numbers puzzle and all of those. I even have a traditional key lock, you know, so you hide the key somewhere and they have to find the key to be able to unlock it. I know you can't see that, even though I just held it up to the camera, so whatever. Anyway, the story doesn't end there, though. This is the longest pick of the week of my life, but I'm going to keep going because they also have 3D printable locks, and they have a whole nother dimension. Besides the games that are published on the website, you can also go to something they call their sandbox, which is growing by leaps and bounds, where people have published their own created games that aren't quite ready for the website, don't fit all the criteria, but you can make use of these. So there's tons and tons of these games out there that you can do. I actually created my own game for Mother's Day, so I haven't published it out on the Google Drive or anything, but I actually locked my iPhone in the box. And then I screamed really loudly, "My iPhone is missing!" And they had to solve the puzzle to make me a happy mother for Mother's Day. They had to unlock my phone. It was a lot of fun. One of the things I incorporated was something just announced this week. In iOS, there's now a locks app. So you can actually design locks to be unlocked on the phone. So they have all those different kinds of locks, plus they have color-coded and they have shape locks, so you can come up with even more creative ways to use locks, and they have to digitally unlock them, and once they unlock them, it can point them to a website or to some text or to a photo. Like I took a photo of where a clue was hidden. When they unlocked one, they got the photo to the next thing. And as if that isn't enough, you can also do digital-only games. So no physical locks or box are required for these digital games. They basically give you clues on the screen, and then you have a form to fill out where you fill in the lock combinations, and it only unlocks when you get it correctly. So that you could do on a Chromebook really easily without any physical things, and there's a whole sandbox for that. And then finally, I'll just make mention they have a Facebook page, and this is where I'm learning about all of the different ways people are using breakouts, including one that I really liked. Someone posted that they had used a breakout box for devotion on leadership and teamwork, at Concordia University in Nebraska, and she published her leadership, and it actually included things like, this is from Ecclesiastes 4, 9 through 12, where she left key words out, and that was the combination of the lock. It had the numbers 2, 2, 2, 3 in it, and that was the combination for a lock. When they looked up that verse, then they could know how to unlock the lock. So I thought that was really neat that they used it in a devotional kind of setting. When they broke open the box, the devotion was inside the box that they needed to start their day. So lots of really creative ideas with Breakout EDU, and I think I've used up my time for Pick of the Week for the next show. So you're welcome.
That's neat. So the concept would be, it could be used for team building.
Yes, absolutely.
Could be used for, obviously, educational purposes, and I think that's maybe its primary. So some of the contributed ones, you know, I saw like 290-some folders there full of stuff. Are those primarily for classroom kinds of activities? So they're teaching some kind of educational lesson on something.
Many of them are. They're kind of all over the board, and they're also for different grade levels. So little kids are doing this, but also just lots of different groups. So I thought of youth groups would be a great way.
Right.
Design your own. You know, all you need are a few locks to do it. My son has friends coming over for a video gaming overnight party, and we thought we'd lock up the video games and make them figure it out before they can start playing their game. And he was like in favor of that. That sounds like a lot of fun. My friends would like that, you know. So just a fun thing. I like it that I've done it with my family a few times, and I've created one now for my family. It helps to just kind of practice it and then begin to think about the application of it.
So what happens is the submitted ones, if they made it, they become a product that Breakout EDU sells?
The games are all available for free, although I think if yours becomes one of the accepted games, you can get some swag or whatever. But in order to be accepted, you have to have an overview video that meets certain criteria. Mm-hmm. They have a template that you have to follow. And so a lot of people just, like me, just kind of put together some clues, and they're willing to share them, like the lady was from Concordia, Nebraska. So,
cool.
Yeah, neat concept and lots of potential and very motivating. The kids are asking for more breakouts is what I understand. So
nice. Nice. It's hard to get high schoolers and college kids that excited, huh?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
It's fun.
Cool. All right, my pick, and I'll try and keep it short. Just
balance.
It's been under an hour, yeah. My pick is for you Mac users. One thing that that Windows has had over a Mac for many years is the ability to snap a window to a side or a corner of the screen. There was really no way to do that on a Mac. On Windows, you could drag a window to the edge, and it would magically take up the left half of the screen or the right half of the screen or go full screen or whatever. There was no such critter on Macs, and there still isn't. But there are some tools, some paid for, but some free, that can give you that capability. And I found one the other day called Spectacle for Mac. And spectacleapp.com is the place you can grab this. It's open source. And what it allows you to do, it doesn't, I don't think this allows you to drag it with the mouse, but I don't use that. I don't use these tools that way. I like keyboard shortcuts. So on Windows, you would hit Windows key and then the arrow to move it left or right or up or down, whatever. On the Mac, it is the Option key and then the Command key and then the arrow. So you put two keys together plus the arrow key to move that around. So for instance, if you're looking at my Mac screen, if you're watching the podcast.
Not seeing it.
You're not seeing it.
You have to select maybe.
I'm seeing it. I think this will come through on the video, I think. So if I hit my key combination and hit the left arrow, the screen automatically goes to the left, to the left half. I can hit the right arrow, goes to the right half, just like I would on a Windows machine, all for the price of nothing on the on the Mac. So that is Spectacle for Mac. If you want to know more about it, if you're a Windows user and want to know a little bit more, we'll include this in the show notes too. It's called Windows Snap, and this has been part of Windows, I think since Windows 7, you could do this. It's a good thing if you've got multiple windows going on and you just want to quickly organize them. Say, hey, I want a split screen. It's kind of like what the iPad now does with their split screen stuff. Put one app on the left, one app on the right. Let's say you got email on the left, or you got a mind map on the left, and a browser on the right. You're just kind of organizing stuff. Really helps, especially on bigger monitors where you've got a lot of real estate to play with, is to use these quick keyboard shortcuts to give you kind of the optimal layout for whatever it is that you're doing. So that's Spectacle for Mac, spectacleapp.com.
Good stuff. Thanks for sharing. I use that all the time on Windows, so nice. Yep, it's on nice. Mac, too.
Now, on Windows, with Windows 10, just kind of a bonus pick here, it allows you, if you push it off to the left, it'll actually give you the option of what you want on the right, so it kind of automates that versus having to pick two. You can just push one to the left and say, well, which one do you want on the right, and kind of save the step that way. So
right. Martin? I'm going to talk about ministry resources. Your mic is buzzing a little bit again. So I'm going to go into ministry resources and talk about the fact that we have found a really helpful YouTube playlist from our friends at Logos. Let's see if I can share my screen. We'll see if it works for me. And maybe if I switch tabs. So Logos has a features tutorial and a playlist built around all their Logos 6 features. So you can watch videos on things from the ancient literature tool to the Atlas, Bible book guides, cultural concepts, everything search, Factbook, it says, a little bit different, the Greek alphabet, and more. And these aren't, heavy, lengthy videos, 3 minutes apiece, a couple minutes here and there, but wonderful tips that'll help you in your Logos use. Are you familiar, and have you made use of these videos, Martin?
Yep. Well, I'm not a huge Logos user, at least not anymore. I think these videos, what I like about them is they're short. Mm-hmm. And they're very visual. So if you play these, they're gonna walk you exactly through how to do this one specific thing. So it's not like an hour video you've got to watch and you've got to pick out what you're most interested in. Since there's so many of them, they cover many topics. They are easy to kind of pick, I need to know a little bit more about this particular topic or this particular function. And they're professionally done, and they're very visual, so I think they're worth taking a look at. I didn't know, I just stumbled on them the other day. I didn't know that they existed. I thought this would be a great ministry resource for anybody who's using Logos 6, which is a lot of, I think a lot of the pastors who would be in our audience.
Yeah, definitely. So if you aren't familiar, if you have a Gmail account or any type of Google account, goes along for the ride when you head over to YouTube, since Google owns YouTube. And you can do things super easily. You can click Add To and add it to a particular playlist that you have so that you can find it easily when you go to the little hamburger icon in the upper left in YouTube. All your different playlists are there under the library section. So file it away and make use of it when you need it.
Super.
Speaking of YouTube, we always have a feature video, and this week's feature video actually ties to that news and tech item we were talking about earlier, the Google Slides Q&A, where your audience can interact with you by asking questions, and they show up integrated with your Google Slides presentation. So 2 minutes will give you a good introduction to that feature, and you can begin to make use of it in your Google Slides presentation. So we'll include that video on our show notes website. That's wellstech.wells.net. Just surf on over and look for episode 444, and you'll find that video and lots of other Wells Tech goodness from this episode.
Neat. Next week, Sally, I think we're at the end of this week. Plenty of stuff for people to chew on, but next week we're going to be talking about what all of you are talking about, and that's our community feedback show. So we take all of the feedback we received over the past month, since our last community feedback show, we do it once a month, and you become the agenda for the show. So those things that you've shared, and you can still do that between now and next Tuesday. So please do use one of the many feedback mechanisms we have. Email, of course, would always work. WellsTech@wells.net. Go to the show notes page, WellsTech.wells.net, and use any of the social networks. You can use the hashtag WellsTech on Twitter. You can go to our Facebook page and leave a comment. Pinterest, so you can pin to our WellsTech board. We've got Instagram and Digo and Google Plus and good old-fashioned voicemail right on the page. So lots of ways to get in touch with us. So we encourage you to leave feedback, not only just on the shows that maybe you listen to or watch, but any technology topic that you think you would like to hear us talk about or research or would maybe like to learn a bit more about. So that's coming up next week. Sally, thanks so much for all that you do. Thanks for being my co-writer as well on this project we called a book. And I'm looking forward to kind of seeing where this goes next, because the whole digital publishing process has changed even since maybe we even looked at it the last time, and I think has maybe moved a step forward. One of our listeners, Rob Gunther, has kind of shown us the way to, in some respect, how to get published on Amazon. So we'll be happy to share that process as well. Thanks to everybody who is listening and watching. We hope that you will come back next week. Blessings on your week. Bye-bye.